in which all the constants I had yesterday are now equal to 1. I don't need to think anymore about the non-relativistic limit, so I just change the variables in order that m equal to c equal to h bar equal to 1. And so the Dirac operator I'm going to consider is h0 minus I alpha dot nabla plus beta. Okay, the alphas and the betas, remember, are the matrices, the Dirac poly matrices. And in this case, what we have is that h0 square is equal to 1 identity minus Laplacian. Okay? So in some sense, the Dirac operator is like the square root of 1 minus Laplacian with the two signs. So more or less, between quotes, h0 is equal to plus and minus at the same time, 1 minus the square root of 1 minus Laplacian. Okay. So as I told you yesterday, one tool which is fundamental in the study of eigenvalues of operators like A0 plus B involves the study of different kind of hard inequalities to be able to compare V with A0. Okay? Because we are going to be interested in looking at the Rayleigh quotient of A0 plus B. So we'll take functions psi from R3 into C4. And will be the eigenvalues, formally at least, are critical points of the Rayleigh quotient A0 plus B psi psi over psi psi. And this is inner product in L2. And so when we look here at the quadratic form, which is in the numerator, we see that we have the term H0 psi psi, which is kind of kinetic energy term. And we have the V psi psi, which is potential energy term. And we have to be able to control things in order to prove existence of critical points for this of this quotient. I remind you that we are interested in finding eigenvalues in the gap of the essential spectrum, which in this case is the open interval minus 1, 1. Okay, so the hard inequalities I'm going to write down several ones. So the hard inequalities. So one which is the most classical one, we are all used to it, all using to use it all the time, is I'm going just to consider the case n equal to 3. And the classical one is just the inequality which says that the integral over R3 of gradient to the square is larger than or equal to 1/4 integral of u squared over x squared. And this for all u, for example, in h1, 0 of R3. Okay. So this, in terms of operators, this says actually that the operator minus Laplacian is bounded below by the operator 1 over 4 x squared. Okay, so we can use classical results of operator I don't know how to say that in English, of things to the operators. We infer from this actually that we can take square roots of this inequality, and so here I can just add here 1 and I will only improve the inequality because I am adding something positive. And if I take the square root of this, I can prove easily that the absolute value of H0 is larger than the square root of this, which is 1 over 2x in operator terms. And this could mean, actually, if I come back to functions, that H0 psi psi is larger than 1 over 2x psi square for every psi, for example, in H1 half of R3 with values in C4. Okay, but actually there is a result by I think the first who proved that is Kato, who proved that actually the constant you can get for the Dirac operator is better than the one you get from this one taking the square root. So Kato's inequality says the following thing. Kato's inequality, which is kind of Hardy, so it's you can call that Hardy Kato's inequality. It says that for every psi in H1 half of R3 with values in C4, you have that H0 absolute value, psi is larger than 2 over pi, so this is the best constant, times the square, times the integral over R3 of psi squared over x. Okay, so this is the best constant, 2 over pi, which is better than 1 over 2. And this is optimal. But actually, recently, I mean, around 96-97, people noticed that it would be maybe interesting to, maybe it will be clear a little bit later, to look for inequality which will be not for all psi's in H1/2, but in some subset of this set. Let me explain that. And so in order to do that, let me introduce some notation. We have this operator here which has this essential spectrum, the two pieces of the essential spectrum. And actually this the structure of the operator allows us to introduce two projection operators, lambda plus and minus, which I will define explicitly, 1/2 identity plus minus H0 over square root of 1 minus sigma, minus Laplacian. These are projectors in the sense that when you take the square, you get the same thing. The identity is equal to lambda plus lambda minus, the orthogonal. And so the existence of these projectors, which are actually spectral projectors associated to H0, allows us to decompose the space, for example, H1/2, I call H1/2 equal to X. We can decompose it as the direct sum of some X plus and X minus. Both are infinite dimensional spaces. They are just the images of X by lambda plus minus. Okay? And if you apply H0 to X plus minus, you get into X plus minus. Okay, so you can decompose the space in this way. And so they are, it was visible, I mean, you will see it later in the comments and the proof I will sketch afterwards. It would be interesting to look for a better hard inequality for something with a better constant, looking independently at function psi, which lie not just in x, but differentiate, look for a special function which are either in x plus or in x minus. Okay, which are not in the, which don't have components in the, in both spaces at the same time. And the idea also is that it will be clear, I hope, also later on, is that by using this Katos inequality, one can directly look for critical points of this Rayleigh quotient and find an optimal result, which is that, for example, if you look at the operator H0 minus nu over x, which is Coulomb potential, by using this Katos inequality, the best nu one can take to find the eigenvalues in the gap of the spectrum, etc., to develop all the proofs, is nu between 0 and this constant. And this is not optimal in the sense that explicitly for the Coulomb potential, it is known that one can go up to nu equal to 1. And get all the eigenvalues, etc. So there is some gap between 2 over pi and 1, and so people try to improve this. And so there is improved, it's not improved because this is optimal, but alternative Hardy type inequality, which is due both to Tix, there are two different proofs at the same time, Burenkov-Evans. And they prove the following thing. So they have a better constant here, so they have H0 psi larger than 2 over pi over 2 plus 2 over pi, which is the best constant, times integral of psi squared over x. But this is the best constant, this one, but of course it can't be for every psi in H1/2. This is for every psi in x plus union x minus. So either we have only positive component or negative component, but we don't have mixture of the two. In this case, this constant is better, and it's more or less, you compute numerically this, is more or less 0.9. So it's better than, it's much better than this one, but still it's not one. We know that the optimal one is one. Let me just make some comments about the mean of these constants. I told you at the beginning that I was choosing units with all the constants are equal to one. That means that if I change the units to change the operator, I have also to change the potential. So if, for example, I am looking at an atom which has a nucleus with charge Z, so Z protons, when I change the units, the operator I get is H0 minus alpha Z over X. This alpha is a constant which comes from the change of variables. It's called in physics the fine structure constant, and its value is approximately 1 over 137. So, say that alpha Z is less than 1 means that I can consider nuclei which have up to 137 protons, which is okay for nuclei. Or known stable nuclei are covered by this. In this case, if we use Tiks and Burekov-Evans inequality, this 0.9 gives us Z less than 124, which is not bad. And in Kato's case, it's, I think, 89. So improving the inequalities, or using better inequalities, allow us to consider more general nuclei in the models. Okay. So this is these are the inequalities that are available. So this one is this was published in 1966 by Kato, and this has been published in 1997. This is a very recent one. And and actually at the end of
Kato's is best constant for
H1 half? Yes. This is best constant. And here also is best constant. You distinguish X plus and X minus. All is optimal. All these inequalities are optimal.
You say that H0 is positive.
Yes. Yes. Actually, I need that for later on, so I will say it now. So actually, also when you look carefully at these projectors, you can see actually that the operator lambda plus H0 lambda plus is equal to the square root of 1 minus Laplacian. It's a positive operator. And lambda minus H0 lambda minus is equal to minus. So when I was saying that H0 was more or less like plus and minus the square root of 1 minus Laplacian, actually what I'm saying is that on X plus, H0 is just the positive square root. And on X minus, it's minus the square root. Okay, so by using these inequalities, one can prove some results about the existence of eigenvalues and how to characterize them. And we'll see tomorrow that actually, by the abstract result that I was speaking about yesterday, we will be able to produce some Hardy-type inequalities in the end as a subproduct of our theorem, which will extend these inequalities in some sense. But they are very strange, we'll see them tomorrow, in the sense that these ones are homogeneous in X, and the ones we find are not. So it's strange Hardy inequalities that come in the proof of our theorem and the application to Dirac operators. So we'll see that tomorrow. So today I'm going now to present the first result about characterization of eigenvalues. Of H0 plus B. And I'm going to use these Hardy-type inequalities. So in this first result, I'm going to use the method we used at the beginning, which is a direct min-max result. So it's direct variational result. So it means min-max technique. Naively used, so it's a very naive min-max that we introduced to deal with this. And which says the following thing. I am going to give some assumptions on the operator. So the operator V is a scalar potential, excuse me, the potential is a scalar potential such that V goes to zero at infinity. We need also to create eigenvalues that V is not too small at infinity, and that assumption can be written as the limb when R goes to plus infinity of the sub essential for X larger than R of Vx X squared equal to minus infinity. So I need that V is large enough at infinity, negative. That's to create, to be able to have eigenvalues, otherwise maybe we don't have eigenvalues at all. And the third assumption is the main assumption, which is the following. We ask the potential to be not too large in the following sense. We ask that lambda plus H0 plus V lambda plus is bounded below by some delta square root of 1 minus Laplacian with some delta positive. And for the negative projectors, we have lambda minus H0 plus V lambda minus less than minus delta 1 minus. So these inequalities. And actually, these inequalities, for example, if we look at the special case of the Coulomb potential, by using Tiks and Burenkov-Evans inequality, it's easy to see that all these assumptions are satisfied by V equal to minus nu over X for nu between 0 and that constant, 2 over 2 pi plus pi over 2. So more or less 0.9. So if we consider Coulomb potentials, all these assumptions are satisfied by Coulomb potentials for nu less than more or less 0.9. So I stated the assumptions, but I didn't state the statement of the theorem. So the theorem says the following thing. Under these assumptions, then there exist all the eigenvalues of A0 plus B in minus 1, 1 are given by the following min maxes. I define them. Lambda K of H0 plus B so the question is that we have a min max, a min sub if you want. We have the Rayleigh quotient, of course, and we have to decide what we put under the min and the max. That's the main point. What we put is the following thing. To have the kth eigenvalue, we put here any subspace of X plus with dimension K, and here we take any psi which is different from 0 and psi in F direct sum with X minus. So this is the min maxes we introduce, and these are going to give all the eigenvalues counted with multiplicity. Under these assumptions, there is an infinity of them. There is a whole sequence. All of them are going to be positive, and this goes to 1 when k goes to plus infinity. Okay. This, we count to prove this theorem, we can't prove abstract min-max results, because this, the composition of the space in x plus some x minus is done with respect to the free Dirac operator. And here we are adding this V here, so the sets in which we do the min-max are not invariant under H0 plus V. So we can't use abstract usual min-max theory to say that these numbers that we define like that are eigenvalues. So we have to prove that. Okay, so, well, the proof is just a direct proof by simple computation, so I will give a sketch of the proof to indicate where the assumptions are used. So it's a simple proof, nothing fancy. just direct computation of things. The main point is that when we look at the IMSOUP, this soup, thanks to the assumptions we made, especially thanks to this assumption, which I call H1, thanks to this assumption, the quadratic form, which is in the numerator, so if I define Q of, let me decide, so I have, I do it for lambda 1, okay? So in the case of lambda 1, lambda 1 is inf e plus in x plus sup e plus x minus a0 plus b psi 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 psi. Okay? And so if I am looking at functions which lie in this set here, this quadratic form is a quadratic form in x minus. So I can define this as q of psi minus. Well, this function you want is can be written as a0 plus b e plus plus 2 real part of a0 plus b e plus c minus plus h0 plus b psi minus, okay? And I have to normalize things to the denominator. And the main point is that this quadratic form in psi minus, e plus is fixed, okay? Is strictly concave. And it's strictly concave due to the hypothesis which I made here. So since it's strictly concave, there is a unique maximizer for this subproblem here. Okay? And the, so there's for every E plus, there's a unique maximizer. And so we can write the Euler-Lagrange equations for every E plus. If I call this sup here, I call it lambda of E plus, this number. I have that the Euler-Lagrange equations of this maximization problem is the following. So I have some lambda minus tilde, which is the maximizer. So I have that this is the maximizer of the maximization problem. So I call this psi tilde. And so I will have an Euler-Lagrange equation, which is just H0 plus B psi tilde equal to lambda E plus psi tilde plus something, which I call G tilde. And this G tilde has to be orthogonal to the space in which I am maximizing. Okay, so I get some Euler-Lagrange equations, which are not exactly eigenvalue equations, because I have this G here. And now the proof is just the following. We take now a minimizing sequence for the minimization problem. I call this EN, EN plus if you want. And so I'm going to have a sequence of problems, which are H0 plus V psi N lambda N psi N plus GN. And the GNs will be all the time orthogonal to EN direction with X minus. And now we have to be able to pass to the limit here, that's all. So there are several steps. First step, we have to get a priori estimates on the solutions psi n. So estimates on psi n. And this is again due to H1. So it's this hypothesis which helps at us getting estimates in H1 half. Second, we have to be able to show that the GNs are going to converge to zero in some sense to get rid of them, because in the end we want to pass to the limit and get an eigenvalue problem, okay? So we want to prove that the GNs go to zero in some sense, and actually we prove that with our assumptions they converge to zero in H minus one half. We have that the lambda Ns here converge to the IMSOUP we are looking for, the lambda one. And now we want to pass to the limit. And we want to pass to the limit by, so if the GN converges to zero, what we want to do is to pass to the limit here now, weakly, for example, to some psi bar. And we want to be sure that the psi bar is different from zero. And this is some kind of compactness that we need to prove that. And this compactness is going to be given again by the fact that V goes to 0 at infinity, and also by the fact that the lambda 1, due to the second assumption, is going to be in the gap minus 1, 1. So this is some kind of compactness is needed here. And then we do this thing, and we pass to the limit, and we get an eigenvalue. And we prove that this lambda 1 is an eigenvalue of H0 plus B. And we do the same for the other eigenvalues. So you see that this is really a very elementary proof. And what we see is strange. In some sense, it's very elementary, and at the same time, it's very, it's a little bit puzzling, because we are using this min-max, which is not really very, very reasonable, in the sense, as I was telling you, it's not a useful min-max, in the sense that these sets are not invariant under the action of H0 plus B. Okay? And this is because the composition of the space we chose is related to the free Dirac operator, and now we are looking at an operator which is the free Dirac plus some V. But still, we are able to prove that these min-maxes are eigenvalues. But, as I told you, we can't get the full result that we expect and that we know in the case of the Coulomb potentials. We can't reach 1, mu equal to 1. We only reach, using Tiks and Borenkov-Evans inequality, we can only get 0.9. And also, I hope that you see here that Tiks and Borenkov-Evans inequality, hard inequality, is enough to deal with this, because since we are doing the min-max, actually in the max here, we are fixing the positive component of the vectors, and we are maximizing x minus. So that's why it's enough to have a hard inequality which distinguishes positive components and negative components. Okay? So this is the thing we could prove, the most general result we could prove by a direct min-max result. But at this point, we were puzzled because we knew that this wasn't optimal result, because we know that in the case of Coulomb potentials, we have to be able to reach 1. Not reach 1, but just go up to 1. So we wanted to understand how to get 1. And second, we wanted also to understand this min-max, because it was really a very strange min-max.
Do you have also a formula for that it is a infimum over the orthogonal space orthogonal to the first k eigenvalues?
You can write that, yes. Okay, so trying to understand things, we change completely our way of looking at this problem. Because, well, this gives us the eigenvalues, but it's a little bit by brute force. I mean, this proof is not very elegant. There is no fancy, there is no topology, there is nothing. This is just differentiating, doing formal computations, and using the assumptions. So we want to understand a little bit the structure of all this. And so we now we have found a result which is which allows us to understand a little bit more what is happening, and which is a general abstract result.
K eigenfunctions are in x minus plus fk for some fk. The first eigenfunctions corresponding to this.
The psi 1, you mean?
Yeah. Isn't it in x minus plus?
It has a positive and negative component. Both are non-zero. They are non in. I mean, all the eigenvalues have a positive and a negative component. That was your question.
With fk infinity, yeah. So once you have a vector, you can always say it's minus or fk.
Yes, but the decomposition here is associated with the free one.
Yes, yes. I mean, we had the decomposition for the real. I mean, once we know the spectrum of H0 plus B, we could decompose the space in another way by using the corresponding positive and negative operator projectors corresponding to this. And then in this case, of course, all the eigenvalues would be in the positive space related to this. But we don't know this a priori. We knew this. We don't need to compute the eigenvalues. So we have to start from something that we know, that is the free decomposition, and then construct the eigenvalues. Okay, so the result that I'm going to present now is a general abstract result, which I imagine that you will think, well, why to work to obtain something which looks much worse than the previous thing. But the result, I will convince you that actually it's an abstract result which looks more complicated but gives optimal results for the eigenvalues. So let me now consider a general case. I forget for a moment the Dirac operator. So I consider that I have a self-adjoint operator which has some domain, some form domain. And I suppose that I'm working in a space H. In general, in our case, will be always L2, which is decomposable as the sum of some spaces H plus and H minus. And I have also projectors associated P plus and P minus. And then I have to make some assumptions. So assumption one, which you are not familiar with the spectral theory, you just forget about this, is the existence of core of F, of A. Core means is a space which is dense in the domain, for the topology of the domain. So we need the existence of a core F such that P plus minus of F lives in the form domain. So forget about this in the cases which are interested. We are interested in F will be always C infinity function with compact domain and will always have this. So this is just technical assumption which always works in this with these operators. Second assumption is that if we look at the Rayleigh quotient x a x minus over x minus and we only look at x minuses which live in the negative space, I define a minus, this constant, as the supremum of this Rayleigh quotient for x minus in h minus. No, I can use the core, for example, in this I'm going to call F plus and minus. The core is very nice because it's infinity functions in general, so it's nicer to write like this. So I am going to look at this supremum, and the assumption is that this number is a finite number, and the main assumption is the following, is that we have a number which is always above this sup, and which is actually... of course, I erased everything, so I'm going to write the min maxes now here. So lambda k, where the inf sup, well, in this case, I'm going to write it here I take f in a f, well, f is not a good notation here, g in f plus dimension of g equal to k, and here I take x different from 0, x in g direction with f minus. Okay, so I write this. It's very easy to see that the first min max, lambda 1, is always above this number which I defined here. It's always larger than or equal to a minus. So the last assumption is that a minus is strictly less lambda 1. Okay, so these are all the assumptions. Okay, if I make all these assumptions, the theorem says the following thing. If B is a number which is the infimum of the essential spectrum of A interaction with the interval A minus plus infinity, I define a number, so B is the first point in the essential spectrum which is above A, A minus. Then if I define all these things like this, with the assumptions I have, especially the third assumption, which is the main one, then all the eigenvalues of A in the interval A minus B are given by the lambda case, for the min maxes. Well, I will write it here maybe. Then all the eigenvalues of A in the interval A minus B are given by the lambda case, the numbers, lambda case that I define here. So here I define these numbers, I don't say that they are eigenvalues. I don't know how to prove it a priori. I have these numbers here, What the theorem says is that if I have these assumptions, all the eigenvalues of A in the interval A minus B are going to be given by those numbers which I define like that. So this looks a little bit awful, but actually we'll see that it's optimal result for existence of eigenvalues and characterization of eigenvalues of operators with gaps. Okay. For example, just to give you an idea of what this is useful for, if we consider now potentials V, so example, and I will try to explain the proof tomorrow. If we take potentials V, which are, there are not many assumptions. So we take a potential V, example covered by this theorem. V is a scalar potential. A is H0 plus B, so Dirac operator plus B. We take a scalar potential which goes to 0 at infinity. This is always the same assumption. And we assume that V is between a constant, which is just the maximum, the L infinity norm of P in R3. Yesterday I was telling you that we took always negative potentials. We don't need it. It can be positive. This is C2. So V, we assume it to be between its maximum and a Coulomb potential minus some constant C1. In particular, the Coulomb potential can be just a Coulomb potential, okay? V. And we assume that C1 and C2 are positive constants, or zero. And we assume that C1 plus C2 minus 1 is less than, we'll understand that just tomorrow why all these things come like this. So we have these assumptions, and U less than 1. Well, with these assumptions, excuse me? Oh, yes, of course. Yes, of course, otherwise it's... okay, so with these assumptions, the theorem applies, and we have that all eigenvalues are going to be given by the min-maxes. In particular, this covers the case of Coulomb potentials. If we take C1 equal to C2 equal to 0, we take V equal to minus nu over X. We take nu between 0 and 1. And of course, this assumption is also satisfied because minus 1 will be less than this positive constant. The theorem will apply. And so we have a theorem which, at least in the case of Coulomb potentials, treats the optimal case. It gives really the best result possible. Okay, so this problem we had about using min-maxes which don't ever reach the optimal result that we know exists, because in the case in the Coulomb case we can compute things explicitly, this theorem gives us the optimal result. Okay, and so this is just to explain that it covers all the cases that we want to treat first, and second, in the remaining 10 minutes we can use this theorem, which I will say something about this proof yesterday but I will don't have really time to explain details, but the proof is some abstract spectral theory of operators, and so we can use this abstract theorem to prove another theorem. I write it here, which is the one that we will use actually to prove our results on Dirac operators, and which is the following theorem, which is just an easy consequence of that one, which is based on some continuation principle, some continuation argument. And which will be it's the one you want to use. Okay, so this theorem says the following thing. Suppose now that we have a family of, we have some parameter mu in an interval I. For example, I assume that 0 belongs to the interval I. I have a family of operators, A mu, which is A0 plus some B mu. V nu are bounded functions with a depend on nu, and they are continuous with respect to nu. And what else? Now we make assumptions on the same kind of assumptions as there. So we have that the domain of all these operators is the domain of the A0 operator, the same thing with the form domain. Well, this is just technical things, not important. And now we make the real assumptions. First is, again, the existence of a core for A0 such that plus and minus is in the form domain of A0. We have also the P plus and minus projections exactly like there, only now we are playing with a family of operators. Now, if we define the numbers, which are the numbers equivalent to the A minus here, so we define the supremum of the Rayleigh quotient over the negative space, but of course it depends on nu, so I have A nu minus, which is by definition the supremum of A nu xx, x minus over x minus for x minus in F minus. I suppose that they are all bounded by a uniform constant A minus, which is finite. Okay? Because I'm going to make some continuation, but I need some uniform information. Third assumption is that the first eigenvalue, which I call like this, the first eigenvalue, mu one mu, of, so this is the first eigenvalue of the operator A mu. I suppose that this is bounded below by some A plus, some uniform constant, which is strictly larger than A minus. So this is the first eigenvalue of the operator A mu.
Lambda 1.
No. No, the lambda 1s are min maxes, and the mu's are eigenvalues. And the theorems prove that they coincide. So it's not exactly the same. Okay, so the first eigenvalue, if it exists, is above some constant, uniformly, for every nu in the interval I, which is strictly above A minus. And the last assumption is that we have to verify only for the first case when nu is equal to zero that lambda 1 zero is strictly above A minus. Okay, so we have to distinguish eigenvalues and min maxes. Okay? So this is something like the theorem I have there, but only we have to make uniform assumptions with respect to nu in the interval I. So if we verify all these things, then the theorem says, then for all mu's in the interval I, the eigenvalues, all the eigenvalues, mu, k, nu, are given by the min maxes for every nu in the interval I and for every k larger than or equal to 1. So we are going to see that it's helpful. It looks a little bit complicated, but... So we have to verify some inequalities. We have to verify this strict inequality here only for nu equal to 0. And we have to have some information about the first eigenvalue for every nu. And we have all this, we'll be able to say that for all the interval I, the eigenvalues will be given by the min maxes.
The projection depends on nu?
Excuse me?
The projection.
No, they don't depend. No, because actually you are adding a bounded operator, so you don't change anything, actually. The operator is basically A0. Okay, so it looks a little bit complicated, but actually what it says, I'm just going to give you the idea of what it says. You have, for example, in the case of Dirac operator, it will be like this. We have the Dirac operator plus some, suppose that, well, I can't say for the Coulomb potential because it's not bounded. I'm taking bounded operators. But I can just cut it a little bit, for example, by some little constant. I will explain that tomorrow. Okay? So, practically, suppose that we have the Coulomb operator. And I have a constant here which moves. Okay? And what do I have to verify? I have to verify several things. I have to verify, for example, that the lambda 1, 0 is larger. Well, I will tell you what are the things that one has to verify. We'll see that tomorrow in detail. But more or less, when one computes things there, one can see that one can choose E minus equal to minus 1, E plus equal to 0. Okay? Well, I will see tomorrow why. And then what this says is the following thing. If we can start at nu equal to 0, look at the min max, and see that it is strictly above A minus, which in one computes very easily, lambda 1, 0 can be shown very easily to be equal to 1, just a little computation. So we are above minus 1. Then as long as the eigenvalues stay above 0, the eigenvalues will be given by the min maxes all the time. So we start with something, with an operator A0, which is A0 doesn't have eigenvalues. We branch this potential for nu very small. And we are going to get eigenvalues here. And these eigenvalues could be, their existence can be proved by the first theorem I proved before, by the min-max theorem I proved before. And we know that the eigenvalues are given by the min-maxes. So for nu small, we have already results. If we increase nu, it's easy to see that all these things are going to move to the left. They will move to the left, they will move to the left. Until when can I go on with this continuation argument? Well, I have to verify that all these things are okay. So what I have to verify is that the first eigenvalue stays above A plus, which is 0. So as long as the eigenvalue, the first one, stays above 0, and as long as I have a self-adjoint operators, which I didn't say here, but I said that in the theorem, I can go on. So, for example, in the case of in the previous theorem, I could take nu only between 0 and 0.9. And what happens at 0.9? By explicit computations, I know that at 0.9, I have here an eigenvalue, the first one, the second one, the third one, etc. So this will be for 0.9. But still, I have room because I can compute that. Actually, it's easy to see that the first eigenvalue of this, that's the information, the main information, the first eigenvalue of this is given by 1 minus nu squared. Okay? So for 0.9, this is a positive number. So I am above 0. I am above 0 here, so I can continue if the operators are self-adjoint. So nothing stops me. So in the direct min-max result, I was stopped by the Hardy inequality. Because beyond 0.9, I don't have any more Hardy inequality. But here, the only things which can stop me is that I reach A+, or that I lose self-adjointness. And here what happens is that as long as mu is less than 1, this eigenvalue is going to be positive, and I will be above A+. So nothing stops me here. So the continuation argument doesn't need the Hardy inequality. I need the Hardy inequality to initiate the process. But once I initiate it, this theorem tells me that I can go on as soon as I don't reach some extremal constant or I lose self-adjointness. Okay? The Hardy inequality is not more needed in the process of continuation. And so I will explain tomorrow a little bit more about the proof of this, and I will also explain how to find these numbers, etc., for the Dirac operators. But so you see that actually this is interesting in the sense that I don't need Hardy inequality anymore. The usual Hardy inequality I don't need anymore, and I can go on, and by doing that I just get stopped by things which are really bad, because when I reach this number something bad is going to happen. So as long as things are okay, I can go on and I get the optimal results, and I will explain so in detail what happens for Dirac operators tomorrow.
So you can go on with
what? Yes, I can go up to, it was the hypothesis I wrote before, so I was telling you that I could take potentials which are between between the maximum of B plus and minus nu over x minus C1, this is C2, and I need to have C1 plus C2 minus 1 less than a nu between 0 and 1. So in particular, I can go up to 1. I take C1 equal to C2 equal to 0, and so the, if I have 0 here, minus 1 is always more negative than this, and so I can take any nu between 0 and 1. So I can have optimal results. But I will explain, I mean, I didn't want to leave you today just with this horrible astral result. I wanted to tell you a little bit why these things work and why it's optimal. So the only thing I want to say today, and tomorrow I will explain better how it works, the only thing I wanted to say is that we don't need hard inequalities anymore. We are using a continuation argument, and we are not solving the min-max problems anymore. We solve them at the beginning, and then we go on, and we use this continuation argument to reach the optimal parameter.
Do we need hard inequalities to show that min-max is not minus infinity? That is bounded from below. That's
yes, yes.
So that's what you were saying, that as a byproduct, then knowing that the min-max are those, then you get an improvement.
Can you comment on what's involved in removing the boundedness hypothesis on B? I'm a little maybe the Hardy inequality is used there.
No, because actually, no.
There's a version of the crawl around the last board where you don't make the assumption that B is bounded, but there's some other condition that you must be using.
No, it's actually this continuation argument we do for bounded perturbations, but actually, for example, if you have Coulomb potential, you have approached it by something which is bounded, and then since you know that this is less singular than Coulomb potential, you know that these eigenvalues are bounded by the eigenvalues of Coulomb potential that you know explicitly, and so you can pass to the limit. So you apply the theorem to this case in which you cut the singularity, you do things like this, and then you pass to the limit for epsilon going to zero, and everything works nice because you have control on the eigenvalues when epsilon goes to zero. So the perturbation argument you do for bounded potentials, but then you can pass to the limit if you have enough spectral information on the limit and potential which is not bounded. So you need to control the eigenvalues of the limiting case, and everything works fine. But you don't write this for the unbounded potential. And of course, I'm just speaking here about Coulomb potentials, but if you are looking, for example, at molecular models, you don't have only one singularity. You can have several singularities. Okay, so you can have not only 1 over x, but you can have, for example, sums of things like this. And things of this type. You can have several singularities at different points. And then you have to say something about the sum of these constants.
More questions and comments? Okay, Ernest, thank you, Maria. Applause.